Tonight on Life on the Rock, we have Jacob Niemeyer. He'll give us a reflection and much more. Welcome to Life on the Rock. Tonight, our guest is Jacob Niemeyer. He's part of Vera Aqua, Vera Vita, True Water, True Life, and he has a program. He's working largely in Peru right now to help people to obtain clean water and to educate them about how to maintain it, the importance of it.
And we're now going to a reflection with Jacob Niemeyer.
Hello. So I'm humbled to have this opportunity to share a little reflection on charity and generosity, which were two of the topics that were talked about today. Obviously, we all know as Catholics, this call to generosity and this call to charity is part of what it means, part and parcel of what it means to be disciples of Christ. And one of the things we have to think about when we think of generosity and charity is this innate desire that's within each of us to be our brother's keeper, to serve and to be in service to others. That is the call of the gospel, to love our neighbor as ourself. We talk about Matthew 25, serving the poorest of the poor, we serve Christ. Giving them drink, we serve Christ. Giving them food, we serve Christ. And it's at the same time that we're also encountering in our own way the living water of Jesus Christ. I'm really inspired by the gospel of John 4:10, where Jesus says to the woman at the well, if you knew the gift that God has given to you, you would have asked me and I would have given you living water, right? So this living water that the Lord wants us to encounter is really gonna be experienced most fully oftentimes in that corporal and spiritual work of mercy of serving our less fortunate brothers and sisters. And so I'm inspired here with an opportunity to share a call to action for the organization of which I'm the founder and executive director, Vera Aqua, Vera Vita. As we work to give access to clean water to communities in need, I would invite each of you all to consider how the Lord might be calling you to give of yourself generously and in charity to those that are most in need. Visit givetruewater.org to learn more about how we are doing this and how you can be a part of that with your time, your talent, your treasure, and your prayers. God bless.
Well, Jacob, welcome to Life on the Rock.
Thank you.
And I'm glad to have you on the show. You do an incredible work, missionary work, of working with water to really specialize in helping to give access to clean water to those in need, kind of both domestically, but also internationally, as we were talking earlier. So I think it's a very important corporal work of mercy to really feed the thirsty and those who need a drink. But tell us about your group, Vera Aqua, Vera Vita.
Yeah, so it's Latin, right? So for us Catholics out there, we know what that means. It means we're trying to root ourselves in the Catholic principles and we operate within that, but it means true water, true life. And kind of at our core, our mission statement is to tap into the physical and spiritual nature of water to empower people and communities in need in developing countries to generate clean water and sanitation solutions that bring true water, true life.
Yeah. And it's a great need. It's one of those, water is a basic necessity that we need. And
right, I think, to life, really, I mean, really, in a lot of ways.
And I think in the United States, it's something we can take for granted very easily. It's just something we have access to. Usually it's clean, it's in abundance. But in many places in the world, that's not the case. It's very life-threatening in many ways of just maybe the scarcity or of just the pollution of what's going on into water. But I wanted to talk to you really at the beginning of how you got involved. What inspired you to go into this direction?
Yeah, so, you know, kind of, I would actually, just thinking about this the other day, believe it or not, and my love for water in general, you know, I think is what played into what allowed it to be fertile ground, if you will, for the Lord to plant in my heart to eventually be doing what I'm doing today. And I was thinking back to when I was a kid, actually, and my wife and I were talking about this just a few days ago, believe it or not. And we were on a
a camping trip with my family in southern Indiana. I grew up in Indiana, and my family has a big farm in southern Indiana, and we're down there over a weekend in the spring, and it was a rainy weekend. And my cousin and I were probably no more than 12 or 13, we were middle school age. And there's this ditch kind of at the low point of the drive that goes into this, my family's property where we like to go camping. And it had rained a bunch, and we're just playing around in the water in the ditch. And there's a little culvert underneath the road, and we just dammed it up. And just to watch what the water did and like to back up, I don't know, it was just, I was enthralled by it, right? And that's kind of my earliest memory of like thinking water is really cool. You know, like this water is really neat.
Yeah.
And just like paying more and more attention to like how it was integrated into our faith, right? And just here, like my favorite mass of the year is the Easter Vigil.
Oh, okay.
And if you really listen to the Easter Vigil closely in the readings and you know what's going on with the sacraments for those that are newly initiated, it's like there's so much water being talked about, like baptism, right. Like you know the creation story and the Spirit of God hovered over the water in Genesis 1:1, like the literal first verse of the Bible, like it mentions water, right? And just like the integral nature of it. And that kind of just was in me, right? And so I kind of felt a call to eventually do work with water and water engineering specifically through an experience I had when I was in college at Purdue. Kind of had a little bit of an identity crisis of like, what am I going to study? Like, I thought I was going to go chemical engineering. My father's a chemical engineer. I knew engineering was going to be a part of what I wanted to do with my life, just because I've always had a desire for designing and, you know, developing things and using math and science in a way that like creates the world around us, right? And so I thought chemical engineering because my father, but then I get into college and go through the first year engineering program at Purdue University, my alma mater, and just kind of like, hold on, like, I don't think I like chemistry all that much. I don't know if I could do chemical engineering after all. And I kind of had a crisis, like, what am I gonna do? And through some searching and some help from my mom, I found this program at Purdue called the Ag and Bioengineering Program and got into that. And yeah, found they had specifically in that, and what really drew me into that was they had a specific program, Environmental and Natural Resources Engineering, with an emphasis on water.
Yeah.
And it was just like the perfect like fit. Like it just like kind of aligned with like, okay, I can do engineering and I can bring my love for my interest in water together and I can use those, right? And that eventually led to me like kind of learning within my department. It was really cool. A very small department at Purdue that was teaching us and exposing us in the students in those classes to some of the world's biggest problems in developing countries, poverty and food crises and the water crisis. And how do we engineer solutions to some of those things? Yeah. So I was kind of getting an objective like exposure to that.
The reality of it all.
And then I went on a mission trip. When I was a Catholic student at Purdue with the Catholic Student Center, and we went to Haiti.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you more about that if you would like, but that was the game changer for me. Right. That kind of brought everything like the Lord had been working in my life up to that point together and kind of really set me on a mission.
And you had gone to Haiti right after the earthquake. And so you probably saw a lot of just the devastation there, but what was that, maybe the shock or reality of really encountering just seeing the water problems, because there's many, and we often don't hear actually about that too much.
Yeah,
but how did that really just impact you?
Well, I'll tell you a story, and this is what I tell a lot of people about really what was the inspirational moment for me. So we're driving. I'm going to paint a picture for you because it will really resonate deeper when you can kind of see and visualize the need that we were experiencing there and encountering there and that my eyes were being opened to for the first time. So keep in mind, this was in 2011. This was a year after the earthquake that had devastated Haiti, and the capital of Port-au-Prince was mostly still in ruins. So almost no redevelopment had occurred. And we're driving through the city. We got a missionary team of about 20 students and some Catholic priests from the Catholic Center at Purdue. We had Dominicans. They're awesome, awesome priests leading our mission down there. And we're driving through the city, and it's just like all of us on this mission team were just in shock.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, a number of those folks that had been on mission had been there
before.
Yeah. But it was before the earthquake, and they'd never seen this level of devastation. This was my first time, period. So I'm shocked. On top of that, I'm also shocked because as we're driving through the outskirts of the city to drive up into the mountains to visit a community called Bodan, where we had a sister parish of the Catholic Center at Purdue. We were on the outskirts of the city, and there's this canal flowing through the city. The outskirts, rather. And there's on the other side of this canal, between like the main city and the other side, there's a blue UN tent farm. So, I mean, painting a picture here, there's people in emergency situations still a year later. They have no home. They're mm-hmm. living in a UN tent that the UN had brought in, right? Most of the city was living like this. Mm. And I vividly, vividly remember this woman carrying a 5-gallon bucket. Something that you would use to do yard work, for instance, right? Walk out of her tent, walk down to the canal that's flowing through the outskirts there, and fill that bucket up with water and walk back to her tent. Mm. And I'm not joking when I say that this water looked like chocolate milk, smelled like raw sewage, had trash floating in it, animals defecating in it. Upstream, you could see people washing their clothes and their dishes in it. Mm. Kids are playing in it. You got to think that people are probably going to the bathroom in it, if not near it.
Yeah.
And actually, right next to it was a big trash heap, a big landfill.
Yeah.
And I was just shocked at what I saw.
We got to go to a break, but whenever we come back, we want to hear more of the solutions.
Yeah.
So Jacob, you go to Haiti and you encounter this experience mm-hmm. of just a very rough water situation mm-hmm. there. And I think some of the interesting things I learned just from just kind of looking at the website, it's like 1 out of 10 people actually worldwide don't have access to water. And just how it also cripples a lot of like a woman's maybe opportunity to just have an education because mm-hmm. they spend all their day just traveling or having to manually move water from point A to point B throughout the day. But one of the things, a solution I've kind of come across is something called WASH. Mm-hmm. What is that?
Yeah, so it's a term, an acronym specifically used and operated within our sphere of work. It stands for water and sanitation hygiene.
Okay.
So it's addressing kind of the full spectrum of the need, mm-hmm. which is water, so access, so supply and quality, that's the water component. And then you got sanitation. So you mentioned a statistic about 1 in 10 don't have water, 1 in 4 don't have proper sanitation. Mm. That means they don't have a toilet, that means they're going to the bathroom on the ground right. most of the time. So that's sanitation, that's meeting that need, right? And then hygiene is kind of the nail in the coffin that kind of really drives it all home. So that's on the home front, that's best practices that we kind of do just naturally. Oftentimes in, you know, the Western world, in the US, we're raised to like wash our hands to make sure we're washing our hands before we eat, after right. we touch something dirty, blah, 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 right? You know, or use hand sanitizer, or just keeping our environment and our space clean. The reality is, unfortunately, and this is at no fault to these people, they're just not raised in the same way. And so that's that hygiene component, that's kind of the final piece to really begin to hopefully get them on a trajectory where their quality of life and their health improves if all three of those kind of components yeah. are met and addressed.
And you think about just water, I mean, we think about it in terms of drinking, but yeah. often, yeah. you know, it's used for cooking,
100%.
You know, just washing vegetables or something. But just having clean water, that's so important. But yeah. right now your group primarily works out of Peru.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of probably water situations there, just to encounter a lot of remote places, I imagine, of how to just kind of, really there's a big education aspect to this. Can you talk about the education aspect to just water?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So, I mean, in our mission statement, which I mentioned at the very beginning of the episode, empower really is one thing that we really emphasize. And how do we empower people? How do we empower change? And it, let's go to the Catholic perspective here. Why do we empower to begin with? Because each person has innate dignity. And that means with their innate dignity, they have innate potential. Right? And I think what's happened, unfortunately, within efforts within global water crisis, and I think all well-intentioned efforts, for the most part, to bring water to people has been a lot of handout systems, unfortunately. Systems that, you know, where, hey, we see you have a need. We know that you have groundwater available here. Let's come and dig you a well, give you a hand pump, and, you know, say, see you later, right? And that's all been all too common. So how do we kind of address that? And more specifically, there's a statistic that really drives home this need and why education is so important for the empowerment of these people, and not just general education, but specific solution education and training, which I can address in a moment. But really what I would say is there's a statistic in 2004 where the Rural Water Supply Network assessed thousands of communities across sub-Saharan Africa, Southeast Asia, and South America that had had foreign aid organizations and secular and even religious, a lot of times, come in and implement clean water solutions in their communities, developing countries. And of these systems, 40% were no longer functioning. All right, so we're talking about billions of dollars of time, or billions of dollars in time wasted. And so how do we begin to set the trajectory of change for these people? It kind of goes back to that, right? Empower, recognizing the dignity of them, seeing the dignity in that person and saying, hey, you have innate potential. Let's tap into that. We just need to give you some basic education on better management practices like hygiene that they can start doing in their homes, getting them to see the need. Because a lot of times there is this disconnect and it's hard for us to understand, but they oftentimes don't understand why they even need clean water or why they should need, you know, improved sanitation and the benefits that can have in their lives. And so we bring that education to bear to these people. Like, we give them general water sanitation and hygiene education, but we don't just stop there, because, you know, that's one component. We got to meet not just the physical need, but also the spiritual need of these people. I'm really inspired by Pope St. John Paul II, who's quoted purportedly as saying that if we're bringing and doing mission work and we're not bringing the good news of the gospel, then we're wasting our time. So we really integrate that into our education through some stuff as well.
So what would be some of the practical things you do in terms of maybe teaching?
So we've developed a 3 half-day workshop that we use and implement in every community at the tail end of every project that we work on. And it's basic stuff like proper hand washing technique, which you'd be surprised how many people don't know that. You know, covering water containers, like something that's open to the air, which a lot of times these people are living in, you know, open air, you know, buildings or you can maybe even call them like shacks, right? And so a lot of their containers that they store their water in, if they don't put a lid on them, they're going to get dirt and
insects,
debris and insects and other bacteria in those. And so just covering those containers, also just teaching them how to, you know, create clean environment in their home, to sort trash, to, you know, teaching them the effects of the impacts of water in their lives. So one of the things that we have is our education curriculum is really cool, is because we have activities integrated within it to reinforce the lessons that we're teaching. And one of those is like a really cool one where we have all the parents stand in the middle of two groups of people. And then on one side, we have our team as we're implementing the education curricula. And then on the other side, we have all the children. And the parents are the barrier. They serve as the barrier in this activity to teach of why it's important to have barriers to prevent your water from being contaminated. And us, the mission team, are the water, and the little kids are the bacteria. Yeah. And the first attempt at this, the parents just let the kids through.
Okay.
And the second attempt, the parents tighten up and they don't let them through, and only a couple get through, and only in that sense, we're teaching only a couple contaminate the water. Just again, those are the type of things that reinforce the quality of life that and best management practices that we want to teach these people practically.
Very quickly, St. Pierre Giorgio is your patron.
Yeah.
Why him? How did he come about?
Oh, man. I've had a devotion to him for, gosh, 12 years now. Okay. And just his heart for the poor.
Hmm.
I think a lot of our listeners, a lot of the listeners probably know the story of Blessed Pierre, but just the way he would give of himself to serve mm-hmm. the poor and take all the wealth that his parents would give him, the money that they would give him to go and buy a train ticket or food or whatever they would give it for that reason. He'd just go and give it away to the poor.
Yeah.
And I just felt a lot of kindred connection with him. As I have taken a road less traveled, not quite as, you know, intense as his, and certainly, you know, I'm still alive, and he passed away at a young age, at the age of 24, due to polio. But I took a pretty big leap of faith, leaving a healthy, comfortable consulting engineering job to go off and start Veracco Vera Vita, and just really feeling that connection with him. And so we just kind of resonate that charism of trying to like live in that way of giving of ourselves and all that we have to the people that we're serving.
Well, that's beautiful. Well, Jacob, we've run out of time, but I've really enjoyed learning more about just the water situation and just bringing that awareness. So Jacob, thank you for being on Life on the Rock, and God bless you.
Thank you. God bless.
Well, Brother John, you had a good conversation with Jacob. Tell us about the severity of the crisis.
Yeah, there's a lot. Actually, if you go to their website, they give you a lot of information, a lot of statistics. We didn't talk about it on the show, but one that really caught my attention is that one child under the age of 5 will die from a water-related problem in developing countries every 2 minutes.
They will die every 2 minutes.
Every two minutes, a child under 5. Mm-hmm. And I think it just goes to show, I mean, just the importance of this work, of really educating people, getting people access to water, how to sanitize, very practical. I think just things that we can take for granted, that things that were probably taught to us when we were small, by our parents or somebody.
Right.
But those are just basic life principles that we need. But really to just go out, to bring that water, that mission, it's a corporal work of mercy, to just really go out there and really lend a hand. And I think what I love about the mission is just that willingness, that self-sacrifice to go out into the mission field and really make a difference.
Right, right. And yeah, such important work. So many people are affected by poor water, poor sanitation, and the billions, right?
Right.
And like you said, we take it for granted. And he himself was sharing his own love of water too. He had scriptural references about, you know, it's an image of the Holy Spirit and creation. The waters are emphasized and things like that. So, you know, it is such a blessing. Take for granted. It's so powerful that Christians can be there to help out, you know, to be of service.
One of the things about the water problems is how it affects a lot of the women. Whose job is just to go walk 10, 12 miles just to bring buckets to, you know, to support their life, their communities, their families.
Yeah.
But that's all they do all day. There's just these back and forth trips, and there's no education given to them. There's really no maybe developing a real trade.
Because they don't have time.
They don't have time. School. I mean, it's like that's their life, is to fetch water. And so I think, it will curb poverty in many respects whenever we do solve these water problems. It expands and improves people's health, their life expectancies. It gives them better opportunities in life. So it is a very important mission.
So. Right, right. So, yeah, we hope you all back home will support it and certainly to pray for them. And we'll send you into that vineyard with a blessing. May our Heavenly Father shine His face upon you. May He give you His peace. And may He guide you in all your apostolic works. And may God bless you, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. We'll see you next week on Life on the Rock.
There's no sickness, no toil or danger in that bright land to which I go. I'm going there to see my Father and all my go. I know dark clouds.